Thanks for checking out this episode of the Bureau Briefing. Before we get to the show, there are a couple of companies we really want to thank. Our sponsors. 10,000 Feet. You know, if you haven't checked them out lately, you need to check them out. They make this simple but powerful software, and it just helps you make confident decisions about what's going on with your projects and your teams. Also, MailChimp. MailChimp has been an amazing supporter of the Bureau community since day one, and they are everywhere we go, and they just love digital agencies. And you need to realize they're not just an email tool, and they're not just a marketing automation tool. They're a second brain for your business. They can give you insights, and they can help you automate your e-com store. It's just amazing. So make sure and check out MailChimp as well. And now, let's get on to the show.
Welcome to the Bureau Briefing, a podcast by the Bureau of Digital, an organization devoted to giving digital professionals the support system they never had. Each episode, we're going to talk to a member of our community doing awesome, inspiring things. Now for your host, Carl Smith.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Bureau Briefing. Today, we have got the Senior Director of Engineering at Huge, Mr. Robert Sfair. Robert, how are you doing?
Doing all right. How are you?
I'm good. And I ask you how you're doing sincerely because you manage process at a 1,500 person agency. So for everybody listening, can you tell them a little bit about your background and how you got into the role you're in today?
Yeah, I got into it by accident, I think. I started in engineering, software engineering. And through the years, as I changed jobs and kind of took on more and more responsibility, I met Agile. And through that, I started discovering how much more efficient we can be working. And so it started piquing my interest. And I thought, well, if I can use it for all these different things with software, I wonder what else we can use it for. And through the growth in my career, I ended up in consulting. I work with ThoughtWorks, where I was exposed to a lot of different companies that are fairly large companies that had very unique problems. And I gained more and more interest in how I can solve some of these problems. Then moved to leading Agile, where there was a little bit more structure around solving those problems. And I got to geek out a little bit on the process part of things there and learn and make up my own ideas of how I might approach some of these problem solving, some of these delivery issues that a lot of companies hit. And then I got hired by Huge when it started here. Turns out that things were okay, but we had a few projects that were not performing as well as we would like. And I started using the learnings that I had over the years and started solving these problems one by one. And it's just, I just take it by slice, and it's a real passion of mine. I love seeing people do better. I love being able to introduce so much effectiveness into a process that people get time to breathe, people get time to think. Projects don't even cost as much as they used to because of it. So that's pretty much where the background is.
So you come in, you see the way that things are currently working, and then do you like cherry pick certain things that you can see quick wins on, or are you looking more holistically?
It's two pronged. So one of the first things that I do is I actually take up a mind map and I start taking notes of all the things that I'm noticing. I'm not going to jump into a project right away. I always like to assume that nothing is wrong, leave everything the same, and just watch it. You can't start somewhere and assume that things are broken just because they don't fit the kind of pattern that you're used to seeing. You really need to understand what's happening as part of the holistic view of the office. And once I've got a mind map in place, I really get an idea of where things need help. And I also by then know which projects need help first. And to your point, I always look for the lowest hanging fruit, simply because when you introduce new ways of doing things or you try to fix something, the faster success you have, the more attention you're going to get from people.
For me, it always feels like the best process is going to work around the individuals who are there, because everybody's got strengths and weaknesses. So you do see flexibility in the way that process is applied?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the first rules I apply, in fact, it's a rule that comes from Kanban, is Kanban is going to be like water, right? You're going to try to get around obstacles. You're not going to try to move an obstacle.
Okay.
You can't deal with all the obstacles that are going to be in your way. You have to respect the boundaries as well. If you come in saying, all right, so I'm going to work on this little piece here, and oh, I hit the first obstacle. Great. Now I'm going to move you as well. Now you're juggling too many things. Now you're making too many people upset. The discussions, like you said, get really heavy and intense, and often they get, territorial, I think might be the good word for it.
For sure.
So you want to be really careful about where you're stepping and try to deal with the area that you are actually responsible for and that you have actual influence over. So in my case with engineering, the first area was to look at projects that had a backlog that had information in it, and everyone thought that things were hunky-dory, but then when we started digging in, we found that it wasn't. So the first thing that we did, we said, okay, how are we working in engineering? How do we fix that? What are the things we need to improve? Once you start doing that, then you start putting pressure on the size of the whole system. That's when you can start exploring what's going on.
And it's huge. You go in there and you do that, and is it a project that you get running smoothly first, and then you start to apply what you've learned there to other areas of the company?
Absolutely. So it was definitely a project that we started fixing, and then another project and another project. So once you get the projects running kind of in a smooth way and you're putting out all these fires that exist, you kind of then take a step back and you say, okay, what else do we need to do? What is going on in general? So you start taking a look at SOWs. You start taking a look at incoming RFPs and how we want to respond to that. You start taking a look at how creatives are working. How is information flowing from creatives to technology? What kind of direction are we giving the client when we start a project? Am I getting the client involved? Do they know how we want to work? All these layers, you have to start digging them up.
Oh, man, this sounds like a lot of work.
It is. It's a lot of fun.
So when you do this, what are some of the common issues that you see teams struggling with the most?
Communication, being able to just get up and talk to each other and stop saying, well, this is broken, and then just kind of staring at their screen and keep going. I think that the second common issue is some teams have a hard time being honest with themselves and say, this is not working, or we're going to be late and we can't deliver on time, for example. I think it's a tough thing to have to stand up and say, this is broken, so you can get some help. So clearly you have to establish a trust model so that people can feel safe and can feel they can say something to you and tell you that it's broken, so that you're not finding out that these fires are happening way too late.
Part of that communication problem I found is we all seem to have slightly different understandings of what terms mean.
Yeah, so that's actually an excellent point. That reminds me, one of the first things I did when I started here and I wanted to start establishing, you know, a foundation for how we want to work, is I remember putting a slide deck together that had the list of all the ceremonies and all the roles and responsibilities, and saying, this is what these ceremonies are, and here's what they're not, and here are the roles, and here's who does what. So automatically, when you establish that, people say, oh, I have a little more job clarity. I understand what's going on. And now when I'm in this ceremony, whatever it is, then I understand what the purpose of the ceremony is. When you give them that and something doesn't go the right way, then they start saying, hey, that's not what we agreed we would be doing. Why are we not doing that? Now you're starting to open up the discussion. You're opening up the doors to being able to communicate in a way that makes more sense.
So when you do this, is the client part of the process change? Do they get brought in and engaged?
So that's funny. So today, when we start a project, we have a project kickoff. We absolutely sit down with the client and we say, this is how we work. Here's why. Here's what it means to you. Here's the control you have. Here are your reports that you should be expecting. This is how we organize our work, everything. They understand the whole thing end to end. They might not have experienced it before, but at least they have a basic foundation for why we work that way.
Right.
That enables us to have a relationship where if we have to say, look, too much scope, we need to cut, here's why, they're already engaged with us. They already know it's coming. They already know how to deal with it. But if I were to go back to when I started here, in fact, that happens with every place that I've taken over a project to try to help them out. Typically, the client or the team is unaware of what's broken. And so when things start getting fixed, when we start looking at this process to fix things, I absolutely include the client. And in this case here, when I started, we were running Scrum teams and we were doing point estimation. And so I taught the client what point estimation means. It's just a budget, and here's how much budget you have. And therefore, if we need to work with this this sprint planning, or we need to work with the scope, this is your budget, and here's what you get to trade. So the client understood well that if they had 50 points and there is a story that they didn't like, or they wanted to add another story that was 10 points, or not 10 points, it would be like an 8 points or 13 points, they would say, okay, I would like to put this 8-point story in, and you can take this other 8-point story out. I don't care about that one as much. It's so valuable to the team, because now you're talking in terms of complexity. They're understanding that this is really complex, and they say, well, because this is so complex, I really don't care about it as much. So deprioritize it, because this other thing is more important. It's great to have that kind of control.
When you start talking points, this to me is always one of the challenges for a lot of companies, because they get confused around the idea of story points, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and I've notoriously compared them to Chuck E. Cheese tokens in the past. Because I put in $20, I got this number of tokens, I'm still playing Star Wars, and yet I'm out of money, and I have no idea what happened. So how do you make sure that the client stays in touch with budget as it relates to points?
How deep a rabbit hole are we going to go into?
Oh, it could be pretty deep, but I also know that you are probably the most experienced process person I've talked to in the agency setting. But how do you keep them aware?
So first of all, a couple of things. One, when we use points, they were always aware of how much we did from sprint to sprint, and that was never hidden away from them. It was complete transparency. Good. Even if the consistency of the points from sprint to sprint wasn't quite there. So one sprint we would have 28 points, the other sprint you would have 38 points. The client needed to understand that it wasn't on a per sprint basis that you needed to calculate. You needed to look back 6-8 sprints if you had them and get the mean number and figure out what your variance is and plan for that. So the second thing is you always look at your backlog and you try to get a high level view of your backlog to understand the complexity that exists in your backlog so that you can say, well, based on the speed we're going at, and based on the complexity we have on that backlog, we may or may not reach the goal that we have within the budget we have. That said, I find that points often can get in the way. I think folks tend to use it to measure a team instead of measuring the value we're delivering, trying to use it to, you know, sometimes even try to game the system to try to get even more or less work out of it. I'm not a big fan of it. I think there are definitely times when I do still use it and I think it's needed, but we've moved away from points. What I do now with Kanban is I measure throughput and I measure the number of cards I'm able to push week to week. Now, some people will say, well, you know, with the number of cards, then they must all be around the same size. Nope, they don't have to be. They could be one pointers, it can be five pointers, eight pointers, 13, doesn't matter. They just need to get done. And on average, use a tool that basically tells you what the mean number of cards that you can push through the system as throughput throughout the week. Then you have an understanding of what your average is going to be. So if a team is on average pushing five cards a week and I have 50 cards in the backlog, then I know that I've got 10 weeks to go. It's as simple as that. And the client can choose the features they want to push in and out the exact same way. Now, there's still the issue of, well, what is the complexity that exists in the backlog? So that's where I might ask my technical architect or my technical director to go in and just kind of give a high level estimate of what they think these stories are in points so we can look at what kind of complexity exists so that we're not front loading too many big stories or front-loading too many small stories and getting a false sense of throughput.
Now, was this the way that Huge was working when you came in, or is this all part of the evolution?
No, not at all. This is all part of the evolution, yeah.
Where were they when you first came in? Like, what was the process like? Because for a lot of the shops listening, obviously they're smaller than 1,500. So I'm just curious how Huge was working when you got there.
So, I'll keep speaking for Atlanta because that's where my experience is now. Although I'm working with a great colleague of mine up in Brooklyn who is starting to move the teams in that direction as well. So in Atlanta, the way that the teams were working is that we had your standard Scrum teams. Everybody went in and did point estimate on everything. So we definitely did the estimation by team. So, you know, 1, 2, 3, shoot, and then you give a number of points and then you have a discussion about it and everything. We had that process in place. However, what was happening is, let's say we would plan for 30 points for the sprint, but we only get on 20, then we would plan 30 points for the next sprint and then bring in on top of it the other 10 we missed. So you just keep incurring debt. And that's typically a pattern that I've seen over and over in a lot of companies. They don't understand that if you plan 30 and you could only do 20 points, your next sprint for 20 points, and oh, by the way, because you missed 10, you only get to add 10 points. You see what I'm saying? So
yeah,
the concept is hard for people to understand that you've got to work within your budget. And until you stabilize that budget, then you don't get to just keep moving stories forward and add the same amount of work. Because all you're doing is shooting yourself in the foot and getting more and more delayed and pretend right. like you're planning. You're really not planning. You're just kind of going as fast as you can, hoping you deliver.
And hoping nobody notices this big ball of debt that's following you.
That's exactly right.
I'm super excited you're going to join us in Bend, Oregon for Process Camp, which is going to be in August. And you're our special guest.
I'm so excited, by the way. It's awesome. I look so forward to it.
Well, and for me, knowing the different types of shops and teams that are going to be represented, I think it's going to be an amazing opportunity, amazing discussion. Because we're going to have teams working in a variety of different methods right now, some of which are probably really good. And I just, every time we've done something like this, we've seen new ideas come out of it that still fit within the concepts that people had. So I'm curious, when you've worked, now you were at ThoughtWorks leading Agile, did you ever work with teams that were doing something that just felt kind of off, but for some reason it seemed to work?
Oh, that happens. I think that happens all the time. I'm doing that right now with client teams. I can tell you it feels off, but it works. I think the reason why it works is simply by people's sheer will to make it work.
I think, pushing that boulder up the hill no matter what the hell happens.
Absolutely. I mean, I think people are committed to doing their job. I think people really want to get work done. I think they want to own the work, see results, and get it out there, regardless of how much they're struggling. So unfortunately, you get sometimes to the point where they struggle so much, they just give up. But most of the time, they're really just plowing forward, regardless, you know, ignoring that big boulder that they have actually dragging behind them. And that's how it works. And it's odd. And you look at it and you say, this shouldn't be working, but it's working. But let me at least show you how to do it a little bit better, at least. I'm not interested in changing the whole process from beginning to end. I really love to evaluate what's there and see what are the immediate changes we can make to make things easier. I think that's the key.
Well, I used to explain it to clients. When I was running my shop, we got really well known for process. Now, we were not agile. I don't know what we were. But one of the things we lost a client, a prospect, and they said, well, you just seem so process focused. We were worried that nothing could be creative. And we started talking about it. And what I realized was there's really two ways to look at process, right? It can be a meat grinder that you force everything through, or it can be a bandage that you wrap around a problem. And what you're describing to me very much sounds like that bandage that you wrap around that part of the process that can get fixed.
Yeah. So yes, definitely not the meat grinder.
Yeah, that's not a pleasant. Nobody likes that analogy. Well,
but it's interesting. I'm going to share with you that recently I've come to realize that our process here has become so efficient that you know we've lost a little bit of that creative magic that we used to do, And so now we're looking at that and saying, okay, hang on, we can't lose that. What is causing this? And what do we need to change or remove or simplify in order to reintroduce this magic of the creative process? I think you can go, even with bandaging, you can go to a certain point where it becomes very structured and you kind of lose the looseness of it all.
At the end of any project, it's not just the efficiency, it's the originality.
That's right. That's right. You know, on one hand, you want people to be efficient. You want them to have a good time. You don't want them to be burning the midnight oil doing things. But you can become so structured that you can tend to forget that there is a really important creative aspect to our business. In fact, when I first started here, one of our creative directors sat me down. He said, you know what, Huge, we start with creative. And at first I looked at him like he was nuts. But it, you know, within a few months, I really understood what he meant, because people don't come to digital agencies for the technology part of it necessarily. They do now, but you know, most of the time they come to see what we can do from a creative standpoint in combination with technology to deliver. So I like to think that I'm being really careful about where I'm stepping. Yeah, I think I find the creative types as brilliant as they are to just absolutely loathe the word process, and it shouldn't mean anything insulting. It's really about, look, I just want to understand how you work so I know how to work with you.
Well, thank you so much for being on The Briefing today. Again, educational for me, and it's got me just so pumped up and excited for Process Camp.
Same here. I look forward to all the learnings I'm about to learn from everyone that's going to be there, because I'm sure it's going to be very interesting.